Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Toast of the Arts show. Today, we welcome back Victoria Chick. She's a contemporary figurative artist and early 19th, 20th century print collector based in beautiful Silver City, which is in the southwest corner of New Mexico, right next to the Gila National Forest, the Gila Wilderness Area, and the Gila Cliff Dwellings. I encourage you to go to her website. It is victoriachick.com. And she's been a longtime expert contributor in our different Big Blend magazines. And of course, here on Big Blend Radio, you can hear her every third Saturday, where we talk about art, we talk art history, we talk about Silver City, New Mexico, which is really an awesome art destination. And also this continuing development of the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center. We've been following this story as she has came up with this idea, and now she's working with different people and it's starting to become a reality, which is very exciting. So welcome back, Victoria. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I am doing great today.
Good.
I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Oh, awesome. You too. Mm. You know, I just have to let everyone know we are talking about Kyra Markham today. She is our topic as part of a series of women artists. And we're trying to, you know, we've talked about Georgia O'Keeffe and, you know, Grandma Moses and, you know, all those big names that we do know about women in art. But we're going to be focusing on some of the lesser knowns who were known in their time and are just extraordinary women. And Kyra Markham definitely is not just an art, but also as an actor. And we got a lot to get into about her. But I do want to see, how is everything going with the Southwest Regional Museum of Art and Art Center?
Well, it's coming along very well. We are waiting for a reply from the state of New Mexico. We've applied for capital outlay funds to make a purchase, and we hope that comes along, but we have other plans too. And if one thing doesn't work, we try another thing. So
awesome.
Just moving forward. And right now we are getting so many wonderful gifts of quality artwork from various people, and they're excited about the museum, and they want to be part of it, and they want to contribute. So we are, you know, very blessed in that way.
Oh,
that's
exciting.
Amazing! Yeah,
I mean, this has been, you've been working on this what, for 2-3 years? How many? Don't tell me 4.
Well, it's like, I don't know how long it takes a turtle to lay an egg or an elephant
okay.
to birth, but it seems like it's taken a long time. Although, I mean, from an idea to where we are now, it's really been, since I first came up with the initial idea, it's probably been about 6 years.
Wow, yeah.
Maybe 7. But it takes a while. You have to collect a group that is excited about it. And we have done that. And then you have to learn what the possibilities are, where it might be. And we've gone through this whole long talking process, kind of weaning out ideas and filtering them and sifting them. So we feel like we're in a really good spot now to move forward.
And I like that it's the Southwest too, that because you guys are in Southwest New Mexico. And I think a lot of people, when you think about art, will go Santa Fe, Albuquerque, you know, Taos, you know, immediately. And those places are all awesome.
Yes.
But it's South, you know, Silver City is this, you know, here's the blossoming new child on the block and just, you know, really prolific though, with the amount of artists, art galleries, studios. You do have some amazing museums already in place, but I love that it's Southwest because you're on that corridor, you know, from Texas all the way to San Diego, you know, so it's, it's a good name to have.
Now, we expect that we'll get a lot of visitors, but we also expect this to be a real community asset, not just for Silver City, where it's going to be located, but for the entire Southwest quadrant of New Mexico. We eventually have big plans to have outreach programs and have like a mobile art bus or art studio
that cool.
into small communities It's in the Southwest, because right now, so many schools have gotten rid of their art programs, music programs, and so forth. So this, I think, will be an opportunity for us to serve, not just young people, but everybody in the area.
Yeah, because you've got so many small communities. I mean, New Mexico's like that. You know, we always say when you get near half a tank of gas, fill up when you're in New Mexico.
You better fill up.
And go potty whenever you need to, because you may end up going for a few miles going, uh-oh.
It's true.
But it's very good advice.
It's true.
It's true.
From way too much experience with it. But you've got, you know, places like Las Cruces, Deming, you know, all near you. And, you know, there's, you know, just going even when it comes to parks, Gila Cliff Dwellings, you've got the City of Rocks State Park, you've got, you know, also White Sands now becoming a national park also in your backyard, and Carlsbad Caverns. So that's not that far from you. So when you think about all those areas and all the smaller communities that do need to have that network, I think that's fantastic. Yeah. For sure. So let's talk about Kyra, or it may be Kira. We've never met Kyra or Kira. But
I have a feeling. I have a feeling it's Kira, but I'm not
Kira.
Sure.
Yeah. Kira. But she was born in 1891 in Chicago, Illinois, and she passed away in, oh my gosh. So she has a really interesting life, but she passed away in Haiti. In 1967. So she had quite a life, but let's, you know, start about how she got started in art. It started pretty young, right?
Well, she did. Of course, Chicago being Chicago, we have the Art Institute, Chicago Art Institute, which is a great institution. She started going there to study art. She was quite young, actually, only 16 when she started Art Institute. I just was so amazed at her life. And she, at the same time that she was studying art, she was being an actress. She goes, because that was the other interest she had. And so she started in Chicago playing with the Little Theater there. And shortly after that, I mean, like in the same year, she was in Providence, Rhode Island with the Providence Players. So, and then within about a 5-year period, she did all kinds of, acting jobs in well-known places. And she wound up even going to Hollywood to do movies.
Cool.
Which, we haven't heard of her in that theater aspect of her life. It's interesting to me how many times you look at these artists of 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and you see how successful they were, and somehow they've dropped off the map as far as us knowing about them. So studying her was interesting. She lived in Greenwich Village, as she went to the East Coast. And keep in mind, she was only like 20, 21, 22 when all this went on. She lived with Theodore Dressler. He was a very famous playwright and author. She lived with him for about 4 years, maybe less than that. But she left him because he was a womanizer. And of course, he was married at the time.
Wait. Because I said, the first thing I said to Nancy was, I was looking
him up.
Now this
is getting a little racy.
He was a journalist, novelist, playwright. And that was in the 20s. And I'm going, they weren't married. And then here he is married. Was this a no-no at that point, do you think?
Well, yeah. I'm sure running around on your wife is probably a good idea to think of it as a no-no anytime.
Yes, exactly.
And I think in most circles at the time, most social circles, but of course they were living in a different social circle where this was, I don't know how accepted it was, but it was maybe more common than it was in the average community. So, but anyway, she left him, which was probably a good idea. she wound up continuing on in the she went back to Providence. She then was tied up, not emotionally tied up, but worked with Eugene O'Neill.
Mm. Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And I read her life and I think she just drifted from one famous person to another. And it was not like she was trying to do this. It just happened. And I think what an interesting life that she mm-hmm. had.
I think it comes from her also putting herself out there, yes, you know, versus yes. it wasn't she wasn't a socialite, you know?
No, and she was an interesting person in her own right. And she produced good things. And at the same time, these people were producing plays and so forth. She was doing other work. For instance, when she was with Eugene O'Neill, she was making book jackets and illustrations. And that doesn't sound like a lot, maybe, but this helped her so much because from there she moved to Hollywood and she was the art director for film companies. She worked for Fox. She worked for Metro Golden Bear. I mean, she promoted herself. She learned. She excelled, and then she took it to a different level. So I have a lot of respect for her.
Mm, yeah, and then she also met Frank Lloyd Wright's son, right? And yeah. and hooked that's up with him.
That's another interesting, another little aside in her life.
Here. Yes, she's like, oh, hello.
She married Lloyd Wright, who was the son of Frank Lloyd Wright. So not many of us have a famous father-in-law, but she didn't. She stayed with him for maybe like 5 years. That marriage just didn't work out, and then a couple of years after that, she married a set designer named David Gaither, who you don't really hear much about, but they had a good life together. She collaborated on set designs with him. He did a really great one that only one I know that he's really noted for was a children's production, which was a very extensive thing. And they worked on that. I think he knew she loved to paint and he encouraged her to go back to school, you know, and because he knew painting was her first love. And so she did what most of us wouldn't do in middle age. And as she went back to school, she went to the Art Students League, which was probably a pretty good place for somebody like her who wanted to learn more, but she didn't want necessarily a degree. So she was at the Art Students League for a couple of years. And all this time she was building not a resume, but she's building a style. Hmm. And her style was really unique. At the time that she was working in the 30s, the Depression, and we have the WPA, mm-hmm. we have the Arts and Progress Administration, the programs that were developed to hire artists. She was involved in that, and she was very conscious of what people were going through at the time, what the average person was going through. You know, there was very little work. People were I don't like to use the word suffering, but they were certainly in a position where there was a lot of hardship. And at that time, social realism was a very strong genre of art, of visual art. Mm. And she used that because she liked doing average people. She thought they were interesting. She liked workers and she liked the stuff that went on backstage. Mm-hmm. And so she was sympathetic to that, but she didn't do her compositions like any other artist was doing. Because of her theater background and staging, her staging knowledge and her experience in both in movies and in theater, live theater, she did paintings that were structured, very structured. Mm. And so they're almost like, I don't know, we've talked about George Tooker, who was a surrealist. Her works were kind of like his, except they weren't quite as hard-edged. But she had a different take on social realism as a subject matter. Sometimes she showed what went on backstage. Sometimes she showed, you know, other aspects of New York life or city life that was interesting, because she, like, you know, she could show it, what was going on in an alley, but she would do it like it was a stage set, or she would position the figures in a very structured way, so that she was big on narrative, and you could tell by the way she positioned things that there was a story going on here.
I think that's also interesting. I mean, because of the theater background, right? But at the same time, also doing book illustrations and book jackets are always a narrative, and you have to get to the point. Like a book cover, if that book cover sucks, no one's going to pick up the book.
No one's going to buy the book.
It's a sales job, and art is a sales job. You know what I mean? It's like you're selling the story. You're selling. You know what I mean? And so I think she got that, and maybe her work also in theater and as an actor, and being in that and the plays and things like that, and she understood what connected with audiences better than an artist that doesn't go out. You know, when you paint in front of people, you get a feedback. So maybe she understood that.
And you want to know what's going on backstage. I want to know what's going on backstage.
But you'll never tell.
No. I think the audience is important. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about her work that was slightly different from other social realist type, you know, subject matter. Generally, most of the painters that did social realism subjects were printmakers. So if anything was black and white, or if they were painters, the colors tended to be rather dark. And she kind of more or less worked in pastels. And I think that this is, again, where theater plays a role in how she saw things, because stage lighting is really important. And her subject matter was almost pastel sometimes, or the lighting was very, you know, just as her figures were structured, the lighting was directed. As it would be in on a stage. So that distinguished her work.
Oh, that's amazing. That's cool. I think when you do different avenues, you start to just immerse yourself in all these ways. Art is not limiting. You know, that's the beauty. Anything in the arts, whether it's music, theater, you know, there is limitations on some things, which teaches you even more. You know what I mean? But I think for her to have all these different avenues and not shy away from them, and just involve herself, I think that makes her a better artist. I really do. The ones that connect, you know.
Yeah, she was a social person, basically. You can tell by the way she eased from one area to another area. She just didn't seem, nothing seemed to block her from going from painting to studio to meeting great people. She wasn't shy. Life stimulated her, and I suspect that she was the kind of a person who made things happen, and she was a very interesting person to be around. She and her husband, we don't hear much about him, as I mentioned. And after he died, I think around 1960, maybe a little later than that. And she, you know how some people move back home, some people move to the town they came from. No, she moved to Haiti.
Exciting.
Which she'd never been to before. And so she went to Port-au-Prince, and she established within a very short period of time a kind of group, like a salon, like a French salon, where people would meet and have stimulating conversations and share their discoveries. And so she quickly had a social circle of local celebrities and expats that would come and live in Haiti. People who were tourists, you know, for a short period of time. So they all gathered at her house, and it must have been quite a
little party,
stimulating.
Yeah, I think she sounds
and
like
she still her... she can change the face.
She's a people person.
Yeah.
And a lot of artists are not.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of artists just want to be alone. And then here comes this lady who's like, let's have a party. This is fun.
But artists will talk to other artists. You see, that's the other part, you know, artists and theater. Now, didn't we do an interview with you before where one of the most prominent, was it Picasso or Cezanne that lived in Haiti for a short period? There was somebody that went to Haiti. It's actually been bugging me for a while that when it's one of the big ones.
Yeah.
Was it Monet? You know,
I'm sorry. I can't, I can't recall.
Yeah, me neither. Because it's been bugging me. I'm going to have to look it up because somebody was in Haiti at some time. And I'm wondering if that kind of influenced her to go to Haiti. I wonder what it was.
Not Tahiti, was it? Because that was Gauguin.
Oh, maybe that's what
I think you might be thinking of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds so similar. Yeah.
Yeah, Cezanne. So it's Cezanne.
Gauguin. Yeah.
Oh, Gauguin. That's right. Okay.
Cezanne, Gauguin, Haiti, Tahiti. It's linguistic.
Sounds like a party to me again.
Yeah.
That's what it was. I was just wondering what led her to go there, but maybe she wanted, I didn't know her husband wasn't with her when she went to Haiti.
Yeah. No, it was a total solo thing. And I mean, just, I think she was braver than most people to do that.
She sounds very, let's go see, you know, curious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's cool. I'm glad you brought her up.
And maybe confident in her abilities to use social connections to her own purposes, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. She, I think, you know, the word unique gets bandied around kind of freely, mm-hmm. but to me, she was a unique person in the way, a unique artist and a unique person in the way she lived her life. Mm-hmm. I've studied researched other artists that are unknown, and they lived interesting lives too. She seems to me to be in a class by herself.
Mm-hmm. I love this. Hmm. Well, I know next month we're going to be talking about Margaret Jordan Patterson. Looking forward to hearing about her. She's got quite a life too. All these women that you sent me this list of women, I'm like, my gosh, this is cool. Mm-hmm.
When I maybe some of you have, the people who are listening have taken art history, and you read books and you hear names of certain people, maybe your literary people have studied American literature or so forth. And so I think that when I research these people, it's so interesting to me because they know so many people that I've heard of, and their lives intertwine. And I find it really interesting to find out how it sort of helps make the other people come alive to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happens to us all the time. In fact, we were just doing an interview last night, recording it. It'll be on April 1st, everyone. It's a reunion show with the National Parks Arts Foundation Artists in Residence. And we were talking to two photographers, completely different style. One is black and white and all film. The other one's Mr. Color. You know, it's completely different styles, but both of them were talking about when they go to these different parks, how you learn about one person's history, or you'll see one marker and then you'll go to another one. You're like, oh my gosh, this story continues on from here. And that's how it is for us as we travel and do, you know, all these interviews that we do too. Suddenly it's like Eugene O'Neill. It's actually Eugene O'Neill is part of the has his own National Historical Site, you know, part of the National Park Service. And so you think, you know, it's like everywhere we go, F. Scott Fitzgerald's been there, done that. You know, it's like, so it's all these people that you mentioned. I'm like, oh, well, I've seen their gravestone over here. Yeah. It's just
all connected.
It is.
There's always a connection to something else.
I just want to go down the rabbit hole with each person somehow and do like this big web of like, now this person was over here doing this. You know what I mean? It's like a big scandal. It's gossip. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's gossip.
It's gossip. It is. It's good gossip. Positive gossip. Yeah, no, I love that. So next month, everybody, I was saying that Victoria comes on every third Saturday. So next month, we're going to be talking about Margaret Jordan Patterson. And of course, keep up with Victoria. Go to victoriachick.com. And especially if you also want to connect with her regarding the Fine Art Museum project, you can connect with her through there too. And also listen to her past interviews. Just go to bigblendradio.com and type in Victoria Chick in the search bar. She's also been part of stories that we tell from the road, and also on how art influenced national parks and how the national park system got created through the arts. And it's very important to talk about that this year, because Yellowstone National Park turned 150 years old, and that's our very first national park in the world. And so when you think about art history, you've got to think about the national parks that we have that started in America. And there's, of course, national parks around the world that are just mind-blowing, started here. And if it wasn't for artists, these parks would not be there. It's pretty amazing. In fact, we have to do another segment on that, Victoria, as I'm talking with saying this. I know we're going to have to. But everyone, again, you can go to nationalparktraveling.com or bigblendradio.com to listen to Victoria's interviews and also read her articles. So thank you so much for joining us again, Victoria.
Hey, it's always fun.
I'm glad to see you.